start with. They also gain trust with the child and then slowly start to get them towards sexual activity.
Anything goes. You are teaching children adult child sex. You're teaching transgender issues. And, you know, children are moldable and influenced by that.
They said, okay, now we need you and your team to be able to explain what homosexuality is to a four-year-old student.
To introduce this kind of material at that age, frankly, it's child abuse.
You're going to teach our children that it's okay for any two children of any age, of any sex, to have sexual intercourse with each other as long as two components are present. One's using a condom and they both give consent. Did I hear that correctly?
It's not a neutral venue. There's no such thing. Okay, the schools are doing your job. They are discipling your children, but they're not discipling them in the faith of Jesus Christ.
It's only the exceptional child that even survives that system. Most do not survive, most have not survived.
They believe that children are sexual from birth and that they deserve and have the right to be sexually active and to seek sexual pleasure. And if anyone is stopping them from that, then you are judging and oppressing them.
Even kindergarten now, they're wanting to teach them more and more perverse information and acts and put that into the children's minds. And once that poison is in a child's mind, it doesn't leave. They'll always remember what they learned. And it's by design, it's orchestrated.
In my humble opinion, it will be worse before it gets better.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, hour number three. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice in where you can listen each and every day. And I thank you so much for being here and joining me. And let me see if I can do this way. It'll make life a whole lot easier if I do. Media source. On Iran, and when was this? 021519. Okay, so I'm gonna close that like that, click OK, and now I'm gonna go here. And where am I? I'm in there. And now I'm going to go down. And how's that listed? 02. Okay. So 0215. Keep going. There it is, right there. All right, so this is a clip from an interview that I did.
I'm really excited to welcome my next guest to the program.
Hold the phone. There we go. All right, so this is a clip from an interview that I did, by the way. So got to drag this up to the top. I know, bear with me, folks. My friend Christian is cringing right now, saying, if I was doing that, and he will be at some point, I need your help, though. I need your support. Can you help me out? Anyway, so here I am now, all right? And then, let me see. Oh, I got to do it this way.
Video. I'm your host, Pastor.
Okay, so I am going to show you. I want you to see this difference, by the way, because I think this is like really significant. Oh, yeah. Major. Major, major, major. Okay, so this was me in 2019. You see how heavy I was? That's me in 2019. See how pretty I am now? Yeah, I'm telling you, 120 some odd pounds will make a big difference. And that's how much I've lost. You want to learn more about that, contact me, and I'll see if I can contact the people that help me to do that. I don't know. They may reach back out to me. Who knows? At any rate, all right, I'm going to play you something right here. This is something that I did with Ken Timmerman. Now understand that this is 2019. Maybe I'll just will play it this way, just so I can make comment on it. But watch this. Listen to what Mr. Timmerman had to say in February of 2019. This is 4 years ago. 4 years ago. Watch this.
Mr. Greg, and I'm really excited to welcome my next guest to the program. He is a nationally recognized investigative reporter and war correspondent who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for the work he's done to expose Iran's nuclear weapons program. Prominently featured in the documentary Iranium, Ken's one of a half dozen true experts on the Islamic Republic of Iran in the U.S. today. Since 1995, he has run the Foundation for Democracy in Iran, Iran.org, and regularly meets with Iranian dissidents overseas. He lectures on Iran at the Pentagon's Joint Counterintelligence Training Academy, JCETA. I want to welcome to the program Ken Timmerman. Ken, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me on, Greg. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's talk about this. Of course, there's a lot happening right now. We've been talking about border security and issues that are happening down there, immigration, the president's emergency powers, all those kinds of things. But lost in the shuffle of all of that are moves that Iran is continuing to make in offense against our country. Talk with us a little bit about what's happening in Iran right now and their continued movement towards nuclear armament.
Well, the Iranians just celebrated the 40th anniversary of the Islamic State, the first Islamic State in the Middle East, their revolution in 1979. And from the very outset, Greg, they've been at war with us. It's a war that they declared, not one that we declared, when they took our diplomats hostage in Tehran and kept them for 444 days until Ronald Reagan swore the oath of office in January of 1981. We thought the war was over when the diplomats returned. The Iranians knew better. They've been attacking us ever since, and we have done nothing. We have done nothing in response. I believe that is dangerous. It has certainly encouraged the Iranians to continue attacking us. I can recall just from my own experience speaking with the son of the former head of the Revolutionary Guards Corps in Iran, who defected to the United States, learned English in my basement watching Jackie Chan movies. And he told me how his father described to him the attack on our Marines in Beirut in October of 1983. I was in Beirut. I had been covering Lebanon that year. I was there when the embassy was blown up in April, and I came back right after the Marines attack in October 1983. And for the head of the Revolutionary Guards, Mohsen Rezaei, the fact that we left Lebanon right afterwards showed that America could be cowed by direct frontal attacks, that America could do nothing, and that Iran, the Islamic regime in Iran, could continue.
Now, listen to what he just said about the abandonment in Lebanon by the American forces and the message that was sent to the Iranian regime and to the Islamic nations about the weakness of America, the abandonment in Lebanon, and compare that to what we just did in Afghanistan. I mean, folks, please think about this. Think about what Mr. Timmerman is talking about here and what he's saying and the parallels between those two acts, and think about who's in power. You had Carter, and now you have Biden. The Democrats have been pulling this kind of lunacy on our country for 50-plus years, 60-plus years. All right, here we go.
Continue to succeed by attacking us, and they have been doing so for the past 40 years. They continue attacking us today as we speak in Syria. They are attacking our troops in Syria. They're attacking our facilities. They're attacking our allies in Syria. They've been doing so in Iraq for years. So this regime in Iran believes it has a mission to destroy America and destroy Israel. We are the great Satan. Israel is but the little Satan. And their development of nuclear weapons is part of that overarching plan.
So based on what you're sharing with us, Ken, then a withdrawal from Syria, which is initially what the president has announced, would be seen by the Iranians as a sign of weakness and once again the ability to be able to bludgeon American troops because of non-commitment into withdrawal and another victory.
Well, yes and no. It depends how we do it.
Okay.
It does depend how we do it.
Sure.
Because if we leave Syria the way the president is saying we're going to leave Syria, which is by making sure our allies on the ground are strong and defended and supported, and if we leave Syria by moving troops over into nearby Iraq, and our base there is only about 40 or 50 miles away, and if we continue to whack the Iranians or ISIS when they are attacking us, then no. The Iranians can say whatever they wish, but clearly they will not have won. And by the way, there are indications that that's what's happening already. The Iranians have pulled back a little bit from the Israeli border. The Israelis have been hitting them hard. So they're pulling back from the Israeli border. They're trying to reinforce their positions in the area around that Al-Tanf base, which is the U.S. base, which straddles the border between Jordan, Syria, and Iraq. It's right in that border area. And they are doing that because they see, America, again, as their enemy, and they
right.
want to be able to whack us as much as possible. So we need to continue to support that base, and my understanding is that that is exactly what the administration is going to do.
Now, that's awesome, and I greatly appreciate you clarifying that because, of course, the media and the president's critics have attacked him, attempting to attack him by saying that we're leaving this great big void by pulling out of Syria, and it's really hypocrisy because the same media people have been crying and bemoaning the fact that we even have troops over there in Syria to begin with. So they're really kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth, it would appear, Ken, to me.
Well, that's right. And it is ironic, as you say, that the media and the left, the Democrats, who were going after George W. Bush, for example, for unilaterally invading Iraq, when in fact we had dozens of countries behind us to liberate Iraq from Saddam Hussein. And we're going after President Trump for whatever they could go after him for. First, we've got too many troops over there, and now we've got too few. They're never happy. They're a little bit like the French.
Yeah. Well, the bottom line here, I think, with this president is that no matter what he does, the media is going to attack him. The Jim Acosta spectacle today proved that. Right. All right. So bearing that in mind, where do you see our Middle East strategy right now under this administration? Are we moving in a better direction? And to what end do you see? I mean, what is the conclusion of all this, I guess, is my question.
Well, I see the president trying to build an international coalition against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria and the Islamic State in Iran. Let's not forget that. I have ceased calling the Iranian regime a republic years ago because there's nothing republican about them. They do not have authentic elections for their leaders. They do not have representative government. They are a theocracy and a dictatorship. So I call them the Islamic State of Iran. And our administration has said we will stand up to the Islamic State of Iran. These past couple of days, they've been meeting in Poland with representatives of 60 nations to build an international coalition to increase the pressure on the Iranian regime. I think that is going to intensify in the coming months. It's going to be diplomatic pressure, economic pressure, renewed economic sanctions, pressure on the Iranian banking system, limitation on imports of Iranian oil, choking off their sources of revenue, and hopefully also the overseas bank accounts of the leaders of the regime. This is something very important. I've been urging this to the administration for some time now. Hit them where it really hurts. The mullahs claim that they are egalitarian, that they are helping the Mozaffan in Iran, the underprivileged, the left behind, but they're not at all. They're just building up these gigantic overseas bank accounts, billions and billions of dollars in Switzerland, Luxembourg, and Malaysia, all over the world in tax havens and places they believe they can keep secret from the U.S. I am confident that our intelligence agencies, the NSA in particular and others, the Treasury Department, can track down that money, expose the money, go after it. That will help. That will hit the Iranian regime where it hurts. And I think that was one of the goals of this meeting in Poland.
I want to get to the meeting in Poland. I want to also outline for our audience, because really we're dealing with three epicenters of Islamic State: Iran, which is Shiite, the Iraq/Syria Islamic State, which is Sunni. And then we also have Turkey, and Turkey is also Sunni, is that correct, or are they Shiite?
No, they are Turkey as well, and you're absolutely correct to point to Turkey, because they are one of the epicenters as well, for sure.
Yeah, well, and they're trying to recreate the caliphate and reestablish the quote-unquote second coming of the Ottoman Empire, and that's something that nobody's paying much attention to, Ken.
Well, that's right. The irony here is that the Turks, the Saudis, and the Iranians are all vying to be the leader of the reinvigorated caliphate. They all want to unite the 57 Muslim countries around the world under a single leader. Erdogan in Turkey has built a palace with 1,000 rooms just so he can host the leaders of the 57 Muslim nations in his new caliphate. And God bless them all. They're fighting amongst themselves, and I suppose that's the one thing that really gives us all hope, is that these three Muslim countries are fighting for domination of the Islamic world, and that fight is not about to end anytime soon.
No, it does not seem that way at all. Talk about the meeting in Poland for a moment, if you would.
Well, so this was a two-day meeting. It was led by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and the Vice President Mike Pence. They gathered leaders from Europe, mostly from Eastern Europe, from the Middle East, many of the Gulf countries. And again, the goal was to do two things. One, to rustle up a posse, if you wish, against the Iranian regime. I think that was a success. And the second goal was to talk about a future of the Middle East when you have peace between Israel and the Palestinians. This is obviously a very difficult topic because the Palestinians themselves do not want peace with Israel. They, right. the Palestinian governments in Gaza and the West Bank do not want peace with Israel, and they say so quite openly. They were in Moscow, by the way, at the same time as the United States was meeting with 60 countries. The Russians hosted a mini conference with the leaders of the two Palestinian factions. And so here are the Russians who for 50 years have been supporting the Palestinians. The Soviet Union was the biggest backer of the PLO, remember?
Right. And, well, they trained Yasser Arafat. And, many people don't know that.
Amen.
Yeah.
They certainly did.
Yep. Go ahead.
I saw them in Beirut in 1982. You know, they were big in Beirut supporting the Palestinians.
I was a Russian linguist in the United States Air Force in 1982.
Were you really?
I didn't know that.
We got to talk about that off air, Greg.
Yes.
We can share some stories there.
We'll do that. We'll do that. Go right ahead, please.
So Lavrov, the foreign minister, convoked the heads, representatives of Fatah, which is the PLO, and Hamas at the same time. He convoked them to Moscow at the same time the U.S. was meeting with 60 world leaders in Poland. And his goal was to convince Hamas and Fatah to work together in negotiations with the Israelis, and he couldn't even succeed there. I mean, I'm sorry. It just...
Yeah. Well,
the Palestinians never miss an opportunity. They miss an opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and the reality is the Palestinians have one goal, and it's called to the sea, and that does not have anything to do with a two-state solution. Their concept is to push Israel out. They are falsely claiming that they have a claim to those. To the territories that are occupied by Israel, and until people wake up to that reality that the Palestinians are dealing in bad faith, I don't know that you can come to a solution.
Right, and they are falsely claiming in English when they speak with the rest of the world that they want peace with Israel, which is not true either.
Yeah.
All you have to do is to listen to what they say in their mosques or listen to what they're broadcasting in Arabic to the people, listen to what they're teaching their children in schools in Arabic. All of these things are available to us either through MEMRI, the Middle East Media Monitoring Institute, MEMRI, or through groups in Israel that are monitoring the textbooks. We know what their intentions are, and you are absolutely correct. It's push the Jews into the sea. That's it. It's very simple. We know that extermination of the Jewish people. They have spoken glowingly, repeatedly, and I'm talking about leaders of the PLO, leaders of Hamas, about finishing the work that Adolf Hitler began in exterminating the Jews.
Yes.
This is something that Americans need to understand. This is not some kind of fantasy of Philo-Semitic advocates here. This is something that is in their own words. It's what they say to their own people. We need to wake up and understand that.
Well, and we also need to remember the history of that the African Turkish regime, Islamic regime that was fighting under the Nazi flag was so vicious that the Nazis actually said, "You can't fight for us anymore. We don't want to be associated with you," because of what they were doing to the non-Muslims in Africa as they swept in there during World War II.
So Faisal Hosseini. I wrote about this in an earlier book of mine called Preachers of Hate, Islam and the War on America. It's the story of Faisal Hosseini, the Mufti of Jerusalem, who traveled to Berlin, met with Hitler, had himself photographed with Hitler. It turns out he was Arafat's uncle, right? They're the same family. He was Arafat's uncle. And he is the one who inaugurated the Muslim brigades that fought with the Nazis. He took that struggle to Bosnia. So this is 1942, 1943. People don't realize this history. But why did we have a Bosnian civil war all these many years later in the 1990s? Well, it was because you had Islamic jihadis who were fascists, Islamo-fascists, who had been working with Hitler. They had put together an Islamic brigade for the Nazis in the 40s. And, you know, 50 years later, they were back there at it and doing it again.
Well, and great circling around on this, too. I think it's important in our last couple of minutes here that we don't leave folks naive. Just because there is a three-headed war that's going on, it does not in any way alleviate the threat directly to us here in America and to our American shores, which is in part of the reason why we need to secure our southern border.
Right. The president said quite rightly, if you don't have a border, you don't have a country. And you know, that is so true in this country, but it's true in so many other places. Turkey has just completed a border wall with Syria to keep Syrian refugees out from flooding across the border. Israel, obviously, has a border wall with Lebanon, a very successful border wall. They also have one with the West Bank and with Gaza. And they built the one with the West Bank. It's called the Oslo Wall. Why? Because the Oslo Accord, which gave birth to the Palestinian Authority in 1993, also gave rise to Palestinian terrorism in the West Bank and all those suicide bomb attacks we saw in the early 2000, 2001, 2002. Again, I reported on those in Preachers of Hate, Islam and the War in America, went to interview the Islamic leaders, the Muslim leaders on the ground in their mosques, in their offices in Jerusalem, in Gaza, in Amman, Jordan, in Damascus, to report back to people what they say in their own words, because we ignore that to our peril. When they go after the Jews, they're going after America as well.
100. Well, and that's where I want to make sure to bring us back to, because it's great for us to be informed and know what's happening over there. And then I think what happens, Ken, is, and we're going to run out of time with this, but that people then become complacent over here, saying, well, okay, great, they're all killing each other over there, we don't need to worry about it, we can just pull back and be comfortable and isolate ourselves here. And, you know, that's probably a whole nother show, but that doesn't work. Because this is
a whole other show, but it is very important to understand it.
We
fight over there to keep from fighting them here.
Yeah.
That's really the bottom line. The president doesn't want us involved in endless wars. He's absolutely correct, but we have to keep up the pressure on them over there one way or another.
Because we face an Islamic global threat, and they believe in their religion that they are the apocalyptic force that is supposed to bring in the end of the world. And the way they do that is by destroying all infidels, and we really better get that straight in our heads.
Amen to that. That is correct, and that's very well put. That is precisely the way that they think, and they're teaching their children to think in the same way. We face a generational struggle as a result of that.
Ken Timmerman has been my guest. He was talking about, give us the name of that book you were talking about, Ken.
Preachers of Hate, Islam and the War on America. It's at my website, kentimmerman.com. I happen to think it's one of the best books that I've written. I've written 11 books of nonfiction. It's my favorite. It's interviews with Muslim clerics in their own words, what they believe and their ideology. It's one of the first books really written about Islamic doctrine right after the 9/11 attacks.
2003 on Crown Forum. Preachers of Hate, Islam and the War on America. You can find it on the book page at kentimmerman.com. KenTimmerman.com. Ken, God bless you. Thanks for all that you do to fight for freedom, for liberty, and to inform us on this very real threat. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Greg, and I'm praying for your recovery and just so glad to hear that you're struggling along and doing well.
Thank you, brother. Thank you very
much. 19 verse. Chapter 9, Al-Tawbah, verse 5. Anybody listening can literally Google it and find out. Al-Tawbah 9.05 says, and when the sacred months have passed, then kill the polytheists wherever you find them, and capture them and besiege them and sit in wait for them at every place of ambush. Ladies and gentlemen, this single verse mandated and sanctified Muhammad and his Arab followers to start an eternal and mortal total war against non-Muslim kuffar infidels 1400 years ago, and will continue as long as Islam is on earth. Contrary to what deceitful imams tell non-Muslims, and most non-Muslims know nothing about the Quran, jihad is actually the foremost pillar of Islam, because it is sanctified and mandated by the God of Muslims called Allah. By the way, Allah is most definitely not God. That means not the God of the Bible. And the verse that mandates this is chapter 2, Al-Baqarah, verse 216. And it states, jihad, holy fighting in Allah's cause, is ordained for you Muslims, though you dislike it. And it may be that you dislike a thing which is good for you, and that you like a thing which is bad for you. Allah knows, but you do not know. And to compound what I'm saying, in the hadith, which are traditions about Islam and Muhammad, the six most authoritative sources on Muslim tradition, one of them is Sahih Muslim Hadith 4631 by Abu Huraira. And Abu Huraira says, I heard Muhammad say, I love that I should be killed in Allah's cause, jihad. Then I should be brought back to life to be killed again in jihad. Then to be brought back again to life to be killed in jihad. Ladies and gentlemen, Islam self-destructs with its own words. All that you have to do is read. You don't even have to study Islam. If you read chapters 2 to chapter 9 of Muhammad's Quran, the Quran contains 114 chapters. Don't bother with all of them. Read chapter 2 to chapter 9. Don't buy the Quran. Google it. It's free of charge. Islamic supremacy says, and in Tawbah chapter 9, verse 33, it is He, Allah, who has sent His Apostle Muhammad with guidance and the religion of truth, Islam, to proclaim it over all other religions. Nothing in the translation of the Quran from Arabic to any other language is ambiguous. Chapter 47 called Muhammad, verse 4. Therefore, when you Muslims meet the unbelievers, infidels, kuffar, chop off their necks. By the way, this is the very verse that ISIS, Hamas, Boko Haram, and every believing Muslim agrees to and tries to fulfill. Islam is intolerant, totally intolerant. Again, read what I'm talking about. Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, verse 51. O ye who believe, Muslims, take not the Jews and the Christians for friends and protectors. They are but friends and protectors to each other. And he amongst you Muslims that turns to them for friendship is of them. Ladies and gentlemen, the implications of the last sentence is of immense importance, and I repeat it. And he amongst you that turns to them for friendship is of them means that any followers of Muhammad who befriend or are under the rule of Christians or Jews or any non-Muslim group would be considered apostates to Islam, outsiders to Islam, enemies of Islam, who must be slaughtered. In a nutshell, ladies and gentlemen, no Muslim in the USA or any non-Muslim country can ever be loyal to the American Constitution, because the American Constitution is man-made, not from Allah Sharia. Nor can any Muslim in the USA or any non-Muslim country be a loyal citizen, because non-Muslim Americans are called infidels, kuffar, unbelievers, kafirun, to be either subjugated or exterminated. And if you don't believe what I'm telling you, all you have to do is watch what is happening in Europe. Look what's happening in France, in England, in Germany, in Italy, you name it. They never assimilate. And when they become a bit of a small minority, which is 7 to 10%, they take over. Back to you, sir.
So the issue going on, for example, with the Uyghur in China, I mean, we have two issues that are taking place there. One, of course, is that China does, in fact, if you're not Buddhist, because China does allow Buddhism, or they don't, I don't remember.
No, they have Buddhism.
Right.
They don't allow it to expand more than it is. Look, it doesn't matter what the Communist Party says. Even in Russia, under the Communists, the Russian Orthodox Church flourished, even under the Communists.
Right.
You cannot negate and eradicate a belief in the mind of a human being without killing the human being.
Right. Well,
so it doesn't matter. Yeah. Because, by the way, China is not communist anymore. I mean, it's a joke to call it communist. True, they have a communist party, but they are capitalists. They are now one of the richest countries on the earth. You owe China trillions of dollars. So yeah. It's a joke.
Yeah. No,
the government is dictatorial, autocratic, under the name of communism, but it's not communism. There are only three states in the world which are totally communistic: North Korea, Vietnam, and Cuba. But the others are not communists. They are dealing now with capitalism.
Yeah,
China
imports
one of the greatest number of high luxury cars in the world, because they have now one of the growing middle class on earth. One of the biggest growing middle class on earth. Don't forget, China is 1.3 billion. America is only 338 million. Russia is only 300 something million.
Right.
China is bigger than Russia and America put together twice, minimum.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question. Although you've got a huge portion of China that is living in what we would consider here to be poverty.
But you have poverty in America, though.
Yes.
You have poverty. I mean, poverty is not going to be eradicated. It doesn't matter what the socialists talk about. Have the communists, after 70 to 80 years, eradicated poverty in their country? The answer is no.
Well, they increase.
There will always be poor people, middle people, and church, or rich people. It's what you call it.
All right. So that tells you that that was al-Rasuli talking about the Islamic. I wanted to add the Islamic part to that, predicated on what Ken Timmerman had shared in the interview that I did with him. These interviews, by the way, this is 4 years ago that we were covering these stories. And what's interesting to me about all of this, as I reflect and look back on this, is, you know, if we were paying attention 4 years ago, and as Ken Timmerman mentioned, and I've mentioned this before, and I jumped in and said this, go back 50 years, go back 60 years. Folks, the agenda, the march, the slow drip march that the ungodly, we'll call them infidels, but that this ungodly group have been working their plan. I mean, the reality of all this, and this is why the overlay, the spiritual overlay, people call it spiritual. Hang on one second, I gotta fix this chair. The spiritual overlay is critical to understand, because we have to understand that there are ultimately, at the end of the day, there's two forces. There is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, God Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. There is his army, his force. There is the kingdom of heaven and Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, announced after coming up out of the baptism of John the Baptist, before at the very onset of his ministry, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. He had gone out. He spent 40 days in the desert. He was tempted in every way, and he had this big struggle with Satan. But it was all about God announcing in a very physical manifestation. And this is why we have to understand the connectivity between the spirit and the physical. Because Jesus Christ was physically here on earth doing war against Satan for 40 days and nights in the desert before he then started gathering the apostles and moving the kingdom of heaven forward and teaching and reaching the people that God had chosen in the Old Testament, Israel, Jacob, who became Israel. It is significant to understand. So he was redeeming Israel, the lost sheep of Israel, and then as God had spoken to Abraham, which is why we're under the Abrahamic covenant, not under the covenant of Moses and the law. We're under the Abrahamic covenant, which is the covenant of faith. Because the Abrahamic covenant was promised to, I will make you the father of many nations. That's key. Because if it was one nation, then it would have simply been Israel, and that would have been it, and nobody else could get in. But it wasn't. The Abrahamic covenant was a covenant to be the father of many nations. We can even track back, and I've talked about nations. I don't want to get off on the rabbit trail of nations. But the point of this is that you've got two forces that are at work here. You've got God, and then you've got Satan, who rebelled in heaven. Isaiah chapter 14 talks about the rebellion, and God finally said, okay, we've done this war, and he cast him out. In Job, he was still allowed access to parade in and stand before the throne and say, well, you know, this and this and this and that and this and that. But Jesus Christ had not been sent yet. And so in the 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, the Son of God was saying to Satan, there's a new sheriff in town. I'm going to let you take your best shot, but you lose. And it says that he tempted Jesus in every way. He was unsuccessful in that battle, and he left and went away and waited for a more opportune time. I love Mel Gibson's depiction in Passion of the Christ of that battle that Jesus was locked into in the Garden of Gethsemane. It's so The symbolism and the my wife would call them prophetic parables, but there's so many. It's so deep in understanding, because he had come after Jesus in the desert, and that was set up by God intentionally for Jesus to make the announcement. Okay, go ahead, take your best shot, but understand, you lose. You lose. And I know it's difficult for us to wrap our minds around the idea of the triune and the Trinity and the personalities of God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Ghost. I get all that. Maybe we'll get into that on another day, on another time, in another situation. But here we have the Word In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Genesis tells us that God spoke the Word, and then the Spirit moved. But it was the Word that went out. Everything formed through Word. What we say, what we speak, life and death in the power of the tongue. That's why that's so critically important. So here we are, I'm trying to get us back to understanding. There's God and there's Satan, and that's the battle. And everything that is not of God is of the devil. That's just the way that it is. There's white and there's dark. There's not gray. There's not an in-between. There's the side that's God, the right side, and there's the side that's Satan, the left side. And we are placed in a position of having to make a choice, to choose. Choose this day whom you will serve. And irrespective of where you think rapture happens or what you think about rapture and all of this and dispensation and the whole bit. At the end of the day, the bottom line here is make sure you're right with God 24/7. Make sure you're right with God 24/7. How do you do that? Through Jesus Christ. By accepting that transformation that only God can do, the removal of the old man and the insertion of the new man put into you. The old man goes away and the new man comes in. And now you are a new creation in Christ. Old things have passed away. All have become new. All have become new. One of the things that God showed me when I was going through all of that sickness that I was in back in 2004, deathly ill. Given 3 to 6 months to live. Been just pericarditis, umbilical hernia surgery, gallbladder surgery turned into a liver infection, then pneumonia, then pleurisy, and shingles on top of all of that. And my pituitary gland and my adrenal gland died. They stop functioning properly. And I was in this incredibly dark place. I had no feelings, no emotions. I couldn't feel anything. It was like everything had gone done, dead. I was gray and yellow from head to toe. I could see someone laughing, and I knew what laughter was, but I couldn't touch the emotion. I could see someone crying. I knew what that was, but I couldn't touch the emotion. In this deep, dark place, and I said to God, listen, if we're done, if it's over, if you're calling me home, I'm good to go. I'm okay. I'm good to go. I'm not taking my life. I'm just saying, Lord, if you're done with me, if you have decided that it's time for me to be finished in my life, then I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I'm good to go. I had $2.5 million of life insurance. I thought my family would be fine. I was fine. But God wasn't done, and that wasn't his purpose. So here's what he was showing me. One of the things that was given to me by a natural path that I was sent to at that time was called stem cells, but it was bovine stem cells. At the stem cell level, life is life. But here's what happens. Every single day, your body creates new stem cells. Healthy new stem cells are created every single day. Every 24 hours, you turn over stem cells. Those stem cells are birthed, and they're a healthy, hearty, ready-to-go stem cell. but they are paired up with the old stem cell that they are replacing. Now, if the old stem cell they are replacing is well and whole and healthy, then they will imprint that on the new stem cell, and the old one will die, and the new one will carry on in the same fashion. But if you have sickness in you, cancers and any other kind of disease that you can imagine, if you have a sick stem cell, then that sick stem cell presents itself to the new healthy stem cell, and the new healthy stem cell is programmed to say, oh, that's what I'm supposed to look like. And so it becomes that. And the old one dies, and the new, what was for a moment a strong, healthy stem cell, is no more. It has now become sickly, because that is exactly what was impressed upon it. Now, when Christ comes into our being, what is impressed upon us, we were sickly, we were that sick stem cell. We are, until we've encountered Jesus Christ, we are that sick, sinful, ugly, dying, decrepit being, the wretch. And then we encounter Jesus Christ. And it's so important that we renew our minds, that we are refreshing ourselves daily, that we are understanding who we are, so that each day we are renewed and refreshed in the understanding and in the knowledge, and we take on that image of Christ. So important. My phone disappeared. That's interesting. It was here a second ago. There it is. Whoa, hello. All right. So important to understand that. And so this is the battle we're in right now. The battle we're in right now, this battle between good and evil. We have to understand the overlay of that. And this has been a battle that has been going on, but it is a slow build. The enemy is relentless. He does roam about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. We do ourselves an injustice to not understand that the enemy is real. To not understand that he is constantly after us. What we also need to understand is the power and the authority that we have been given because of the relationship that we have with Jesus Christ, and the power of the words that we have to overcome that darkness and overcome that enemy. But we also have to align that with God's will. What is he doing? And this is why Scripture tells us that obedience is greater than sacrifice. Aligning with the will of God. Critical, especially in this day and age. So what I was showing you in this earlier part of this is you can see that so much has not changed. It's accelerated, and it is accelerating, but it hasn't changed. The Iranian threat is still the Iranian threat. And now it looks like they are nuclear ready. We have suspected, I have suspected and said so on this program for a number of years now, that I believed that Iran actually was in possession of and capable of that. And the relationship, we talked to you about the fact that Iran was given by the Obama administration, billions of dollars. And those billions of dollars were used by Iran to buy old Russian military technology. And that's what propped Russia up. Putin would have been out of power probably 10, 15 years ago. Except that the Obama administration, by laundering the money through Iran, Iran then gave the money to Russia, and that propped Russia up. And now Russia has come back. This is why there's such a close connection there. And Russia has now come back, and now they're borrowing troops from Iran in their war against Ukraine. And understand, yes, it's a war against Ukraine, but believe me, this is a war to signify the advancement of a dark empire. And I'm probably going to get Charles Cole to come back onto the program, because I'm looking forward to getting him back to visit and talk about the arguments that are presented by the left side. I think I'll let him run through most of the points. But it's, you know, it is clear to understand that Russia is evil. Putin is evil. Putin is KGB. Putin was not KGB because Putin had to be KGB. Putin is KGB because Putin chose to be KGB. You KGB is not something that you, how do you say, are forced. They don't want people in KGB that are there because they were forced to be KGB. They want people in the KGB because they believe in the cause. And so those KGB then are enforcing what they believe in. It's like the German Gestapo. The individuals in the German Gestapo, they didn't have the SS. They didn't question. They were sold out to be a part of those entities. KGB were considered in Russia to be the elite of the elite. And you bled for the Soviet Union. You bled for the nation. And that's what got you in. And if you didn't get in. Putin's heart has been dark for a very long time. And they know that there are certain social evils. But understand, the United States of America, and this is why God gave me three things, secular humanism, Islam, and the homosexual agenda, as core principles to fight back against, because they are at the root of the wickedness and the evil and the tools that are being used to destroy our country. Yes, communism. Yes, the CCP. Pulling the strings. But those are the three entities. Those agendas, secular humanism, the removal of God, and then Islam. And we looked into that in this last hour. If you missed any of it, I hope you'll tune into that. Even quoting directly out of their own writings, IQ al-Rasuli did that in my program. And this is from 4 years ago, folks. This is not anything new. All right. I got to jump. Texas Fully Loaded is coming up next. You're listening to